Welcome to the Ithaca Radio Hour, a weekly program of news, views, culture, and events in our area. I'm your host, John Illingworth. Today is Monday, June 16th, 2003. On tonight's show, we have audio from and reaction to the new Ithaca Police Chief's meeting with the Downtown Partnership, an interview with Tom Lyson on society's role in factory farming, and a report on the Alternatives Federal Credit Union's Living Wage press conference. Last Thursday, members of the Ithaca Downtown Partnership met with the Ithaca Police Department's new chief, Victor Liu, at the Tompkins County Public Library. Chief Liu was formerly a lieutenant in New York City's police department. A variety of issues were discussed, notably racial profiling, diversity training for police officers, and forcing street musicians to apply for a permit and reserve in advance a space before performing. One potentially controversial subject brought up during the meeting was the proposed installation of security cameras in parking garages and other public places, including the commons and other areas where there are, to quote Chief Liu, large groups of kids or where there's potential for activity, end quote. A primary focus of the meeting, however, was the commons and the area immediately around it and what action shop owners would like to see from the police.
The commons, I've noticed from all the years I've worked, requires a police presence at certain times of day, and that's the one thing that's not occurring. Generally from 2 o'clock till about 6 o'clock, and then after the dinner hour till late in the evening, predominantly because kids get out of school and that's the place to hang out and bring their skateboards, bikes, rollerblades, and whatever else they can do to attract attention to themselves, which is predominantly what they're doing, regardless of the $1 million skate park.
I'd rather see a police officer there at 2:30 or 3 o'clock, and at 10:30 or 11 o'clock in the morning. I'd rather put it at the time when there's likely to be kids or just people hanging where again, you might not is there a crime scene? No.
When Liu was appointed chief of police, he was quoted by the Cornell Daily Sun as saying, "I would like to improve relations between the community and the department." In light of this statement, as well as the questions being raised by the Ithaca Downtown Partnership, I asked Chief Liu directly about his perspective on the relationship between the interests of the business owners and the rest of the community, and the role of police as regards the commons.
As far as what we're concerned is the quality of life, ensuring that everybody feels safe in the commons, whether they're either going shopping, or they're going to eat, or they're just walking. So I think if you maintain that atmosphere that there's no chaos and disorder in the commons area, I think we'll pretty much accomplish our goal in that respect. When you have kids riding bikes or people loud and boisterous in that area, it, you know, will drive people away from the commons. That is not the place I want to hang out or walk through. So I think that's an important part of it. So if we could maintain the control and quality of life of the commons, then people will enjoy what the common has to offer and shop in the shops and go to the restaurants. So that's what our goal is.
I caught up with Joe Wetmore, owner of Autumn Leaves Used Books, on Friday. Joe first met Chief Liu at Thursday's meeting, and I was curious what impression the new chief had made on him.
He's in a learning curve right now. I understand he's been spending a lot of time riding around with patrolmen and getting to know the community and getting to know his workforce, and so it's hard to say what he's going to do from that. He's certainly out and talking to a lot of people.
Joe shared his thoughts on why, exactly, some store owners may have a problem with community members gathering on the commons, as well as his ideas for solutions.
I think the problems of most of the people hanging out that people have are solved as you increase the foot traffic downtown. Those people are still here during Ithaca Festival, but nobody complains about them being here during Ithaca Festival. It's just a question of when that's the only crowd that's left here, then people feel frustrated with them.
Is that mainly because they don't spend money at the shops? Or
I think that's what you're hearing from the mall, those merchants that are complaining about them.
What other complaints do some of the merchants have?
It's the quality of life things. There isn't really a lot of crime downtown. Ithaca's relatively low on the crime scale overall. It's that quality of life thing where some kid yells out an obscenity or they spit or they're just bouncing around to the point they make other people feel uncomfortable. And, you know, I feel the answer isn't to get rid of the kids, but to find a way where everyone can be comfortable together. The answer to most of downtown's problems is to make the urban core more dense, bringing more housing projects down here, more business projects down here, more office projects down here, and to stop developing the city in auto-centric ways as we create bastions of the city that are only accessible through the private automobile. We force people into their cars for huge parts of their daily life, and that's just inconsistent with the goals that the city should be having.
After my interview with Mr. Wetmore at Autumn Leaves, I talked to a young woman named Katisha Shea. A lifelong Ithaca resident, Mrs. Shea has within the last year become acquainted with the youth that make the Commons their center of activity.
I've lived in Ithaca for 20 years. So I've been here my whole life, and I've seen both sides, and I've heard both sides, and pretty much know many, many people that hang out down there. And, you know, and there's more to them than just the surface of what people are seeing, because they really don't know them. They don't take that time to come and approach people and share their views. I think there should be more organized things for the young people to do. And instead of dismissing them and, like, making them the bad apple of the community, what they should be doing is approaching these people and talking to them and figure out how together they can make things better. Find out problems on both sides and try to understand both sides of the story and not just pushing one side of the community away. Then people could come together and start doing more active things and positive things and make it a safe, happy place for everyone and not just people that want to shop, because that's not what the Commons is all about. It is about shopping, but there's also people that like to hang out there and have a meeting place, and that's what really it's become, and it is a huge part of our community. They've been doing it for years, ever since the Commons has been there.
What is their perspective from what you've seen towards the police, the kids who are hanging out on the Commons?
I think they're frustrated and they have confusion because they think the cops are just out to get them. I think cops really try to do their job. There's some police that aren't exactly model citizens, but I think for the most part, the police in Ithaca are there trying to do their job, and they're frustrated too. And it makes them, you know, maybe act a little hostile when they shouldn't be, but they're tired of it. And I understand that. But they should also understand that the youth is also tired too, you know?
Katisha also shared her thoughts on how the police and the community can become closer and more responsive to each other.
I think they should have meetings and open it up to these youths and the merchants and let everyone come together, not just the activists and the cops, and make a plan together, meet each other halfway. How can we make this better, not just the police and the merchants monopolizing all the decisions and saying, this is the way it's going to be. What were you thinking? You know, they should all come together and be the community that they want to be. And that means everybody.
Ithaca is a very different place than New York City. But Chief Liu has demonstrated a commitment to understanding the town.
You just have to give me a little more time. It's only been here for 2 months. It's not going to change overnight, but I'm working toward that direction. Let us know what you need.
Seemingly, the city has selected a competent and skilled chief of police. Input from all aspects of the community can only assist him both in learning about our town and in doing his job. This is the Ithaca Radio Hour. Recently, we brought you an interview with Gene Boston of the Farm Sanctuary, in which he mentioned factory farms. This week, Lara Hetty brings us a closer look at the implications of society in factory farming, and conversely, factory farming's effects on rural society.
Animal abuse and environmental damage by factory farms have been widely documented, but what are the impacts on society? With the Western society's need for convenience and familiarity, how have we contributed to the growth of factory farms? I discussed these topics with Tom Lyson, professor of rural sociology at Cornell.
Well, factory farming is something that probably had its start about 25 or 30 years ago as we've introduced mass production techniques from manufacturing into farming. It's had its first impact with animal agriculture, first initially with poultry, then it went into dairy, and now it's moving into hogs and into beef feedlots. We also see factory farming in fruit and vegetable on fruit and vegetable farms, but mainly on the West Coast. It's moved into New York primarily in the dairy area, where we're seeing very large dairy farms coming in and displacing smaller family-sized farms. The average herd size, dairy herd size in New York is still relatively small, probably about 80 cows, but we're seeing the growth of very large dairies, that would be 500 or more cows, probably in the last 15 years, and that will be the future trend.
Could you define what factory farm means for us?
Factory farming is a type of agriculture that turns agriculture from a craft production, family-based enterprise to a very large-scale industrial enterprise that's very capital-intensive, that where labor is very specialized and often de-skilled, and focuses on essentially one or two commodities per farm. So a diversified family farm system organized around craft production gives way to a very specialized, de-skilled, and capital-intensive production system.
So what has led to the whole mindset behind the factory farming?
Well, I think it's America's cheap food policy that for the last 100 years, the mantra has been to produce as much food as cheaply as possible and to focus on producing basically very low-cost commodities that can be then sold on the market to food processors and converted into the products that we see on our grocery store shelves.
Can we talk about some of the fundamental problems of factory farming?
Some of the problems of factory farming are that the markets for a lot of these basic commodities have virtually disappeared. Farmers can grow soybeans, corn, potatoes, or whatever, but they have to grow them under contract. And oftentimes, there's only one person that's willing to buy, one large agribusiness corporation. So the idea of having a market out there is simply not true. And that's one of the reasons why we have such low commodity prices. Farmers are getting squeezed by these larger agribusiness corporations. The commodities go to these large processors who then basically, one of my colleagues said, take corn, soybeans, wheat, rice, whatever, and pump it full of salt, sugar, fat, and caffeine, and then pass it back to us as Twinkies or Ho-Hos or all sorts of food products.
If I wanted to, say, grow a specialized garlic crop in Tompkins County, would I have any success?
You can grow some commodities as long as you want to direct market them, either through the farmer's market or through a CSA. If you want to grow a commodity like potatoes, for example, if you and I wanted to grow 50 acres of potatoes, we'd either have to have a pretty large direct market or we'd be eating potatoes for a long time, because almost all the potatoes grown are grown under contract. And if you don't have a contract either for chipping potatoes or table stock potatoes, you won't be able to sell them.
And so these contracts for growing the potatoes are set up through the whole mindset of factory farming, is that what you're saying?
Well, they're set up by the corporations who need a ready supply of basic commodities. They tell the farmer what to grow, when to grow it, sort of how to raise or how to grow the crop, and when they will buy the crop from them, and they will give them the price. And what the farmer basically gives is the land and the labor.
So the food choices we do have, the Twinkies, the Ho-Hos, so you're saying they're kind of limited due to the factory farming. We're not given as many options as there are available?
Well, when you go from a local food system to a global food system, then you tend to standardize the products. And so you can buy a Big Mac in Ithaca, you can buy the same Big Mac in London, in Bangkok, Thailand, or in Tokyo. And so choices really have become standardized. Let me give you a figure that's published basically annually that comes from my nutrition colleagues. Every year, the food companies introduce between 10 and 15,000 new products. They put them on the grocery store shelves. Of those 10 to 15,000, only 1 to 200 actually survive for more than 1 or 2 years. So when you hear people say, well, the corporations are meeting a demand for whatever products they're selling, in point of fact, what they're doing is trolling for dollars. They're simply throwing these products out in hopes that one or two will stick and that they can make some money on it. We really don't have much choice in the matter. So they're simply playing to the fact that most Americans really are stressed in terms of time, that they're looking for convenience in their food system, and frankly, they've forgotten how to cook. We've really lost a lot of our cooking skills, and until we can bring that back into our culture, I think that we're just going to be fed a lot of this sort of industrial food.
On a nutritional note, Is there any statistics or any information that says which is more nutritional, a small farmer's foods or the large agri-core foods?
Yeah, I get asked that question a lot. Our food supply is safe. We know that overall it is safe and it is fairly nutritious. It's not very diverse. We don't know what the long-term consequences are of an industrial food system, even with trace amounts of pesticides or hormones or antibiotics in our animal products. We are the first generation that are living through this. If you remember, you know, we didn't have antibiotics or these growth hormones until the 1950s. And so it's the generation that was born in the post, the baby boomers are the first generation that are basically eating this food, and we'll just have to see what the long-term consequences are.
Is there any solution that you can see to this problem that seems to be arising with factory farms? And could you give a glimpse of what we could do to change and to not go back, but to move forward in a better way?
I think we need to do a lot of research and a lot of work by social scientists to show what the consequences are of a particular economic form, and that economic form is a large-scale, corporately controlled system of food production. I think in an economy in general that's dominated by big business is not a healthy economy. It concentrates power in a handful of individuals who make decisions. It's profoundly undemocratic, and a smaller scale economy organized around family units is probably more viable and more vital. Let me give one example in New York where we see that, and that's the small-scale wineries. Over the last 20 years, we've seen really a rebirth of small family wineries that have stabilized the economy, the agricultural economy in the Finger Lakes, in the Hudson Valley, and now they're going out on the Long Island. That's the kind of model that we should be trying to replicate. We should do that with other commodities as well.
Well, thank you, Professor Lyson. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks to Laura Hetty for that report. You're listening to the Ithaca Radio Hour. Listeners may remember our report on the Ithaca Common Council's resolution for a living wage. On June 4th, the City of Ithaca passed the resolution calling for businesses who receive development incentives from the city to pay a living wage. But what is a living wage and who determines its amount? Jesse Lynn filed this report on the most recent Alternatives Federal Credit Union study.
On June 2nd, Alternatives Federal Credit Union held a press conference to announce the results of the biennial study on a livable wage for Tompkins County residents. Lenny Hochman, Chief Operations Officer, delivered the news.
The speakers here can attest to the fact that ever since we did the livable wage study in 1994, paying a livable wage has been a controversial topic in Tompkins County and a veritable grassroots movement around the country. We're proud that our study, which was originally done for our own internal use, has stimulated important discussion about the meaning of earning a livable wage and has provided a benchmark for others to use in advocating for higher starting wages. If you look through our annual report, you'll read about our programs and the profiles of people who've benefited from those programs, and you'll understand why a credit union, why this credit union would get involved in an issue like paying a livable wage. Our goal is to build wealth and create economic opportunity for underserved people. With a mission of moving people out of poverty, we wanted to make sure we weren't keeping our own staff there because of our wage policy. We knew we were paying a competitive wage. We wanted to find out if we were paying enough for an individual to live in Tompkins County comfortably. Starting at the bottom line, we found that an annual livable wage for an individual rounds out to $18,061. It translates to an hourly wage of $8.68 for a 40-hour work week. Here's how we got there. We returned to the same sources we've used in prior years. Rent, $527 a month according to HUD. That's the fair market rent for a single bedroom apartment in Tompkins County, including utilities. For transportation, we used a weighted average of the amount spent on cars, public transportation, and bicycling. It comes to $167 a month. Food, we went to the U.S. Department of Agriculture and chose the low-cost plan, $162 a month. Telephone, we just did basic unlimited local service for the Ithaca area. Healthcare is specific to our staff. In our case, we offer individual coverage, and the staff pay 25% of the premium, or $509 a year. And if an employer doesn't offer health insurance, the wage would need to be quite a bit higher to offset skyrocketing healthcare costs. Recreation and entertainment may be our most controversial line from the feedback I've gotten because it's somewhat more subjective than the others. The figure we used is $1,377 a year. It comes to $26.50 a week. It includes things like cable TV, newspaper, magazine subscriptions, books, computers, occasional video, sports event, concert. Really, when you think about it, it's not extravagant, and we consider it a quality of life issue. Savings stayed at $50 a month, but we've agreed to increase that in the future based on inflation. Miscellaneous category comes in at $1,383, includes clothing, personal care products, household products, and then finally taxes.
Many people in Tompkins County live on less than $18,000 a year. Alternatives Federal Credit Union employee Anita Peebles once did. Seated in a packed conference room before a paper-rustling, camera-snapping media, Peebles delivered a quiet, profound testimonial to the difference a living wage has made in her life.
Before I tell you how a living wage has affected my life, I'll give you a brief history of my employment in Tompkins County. I've worked at a variety of places for a little more than minimum wage. My last job before coming to Alternatives was at a major grocery store chain, and after 2 years of employment doing payroll, I was earning $5.60 an hour. I lived paycheck to paycheck. I had to pick and choose what bills would get paid. My phone was shut off on a regular basis, and my car insurance usually passed a cancellation notice in the mail. I was constantly stressed trying to juggle what little money I had. Earning a living wage has benefited me in a variety of ways. At the age of 29, I was finally able to stop relying on others to pay my way. Being a single parent, I often had to ask my parents for money. I had to ask the government for food stamps and medical assistance. Earning a living wage allowed me to pay my bills and pay them on time. I was able to start cleaning up years of bad credit. I still receive housing assistance. My son is eligible for reduced lunch and scholarships for after-school care and summer camp. The places where I do need assistance are still available to me. It feels so good not to have to schedule time off of work to go to recertification appointments at DSS. I make enough to feed my small family and have medical insurance through my job. It's very rewarding to pay your bills on time and have a little bit left over. I'm still unable to give up Section 8 housing assistance, but 8 years ago I was on welfare, and in 8 more years there's a very good possibility I can own my own home. Being paid a living wage has allowed me to be a grown-up and take responsibility for my own life and not depend so much on others, and that is the best feeling in the world.
The Tompkins County Living Wage Coalition cited the AFCU figures in a successful campaign for a living wage for school paraprofessionals in Ithaca City School District last year. 2 weeks ago, the coalition celebrated passage of a living wage resolution in the city of Ithaca. Not enough, says coalition organizer Carl Foyer.
AFCU not only provides us with good research on what a living wage is in Tompkins County, it also exemplifies an employer that struggles to build a viable business while also ensuring that the workers who build that business can sustain themselves on what they earn. The Tompkins County Living Wage Coalition challenges other employers to follow this example. We challenge, for example, each one of our local hotels with household names like Holiday Inn, Ramada, Econolodge, The Clarion, Best Western, Marriott. Your loyal, hardworking employers that ensure your profits deserve better than $6.25 an hour or $6.50 an hour. We know you can make these jobs more livable. We know that you can ensure that none of your employees has to depend on public assistance. You can also reduce your turnover, grow your business, and become model corporate community members. When this happens, workers win, business wins, and the community wins. Our thanks to AFCU for helping us show the way to everybody.
The full report of the AFCU Livable Wage Study is posted on the web at alternatives.org.
Thanks to Kenny Ritter and the Luminary News for covering this event and sharing his recording with us. You're listening to the Ithaca Radio Hour. On Wednesday, Voices for Peace sponsors a talk by Maura Stevens and George Sapio on the eve of their return to Iraq. Their book, Collateral Damage, Photographs of the Iraqi People, documents their February visit. They'll be returning to document the stories of those they met before the war. That's this Wednesday night from 6:30 to 8:15 in the Borg Warner Room at the Tompkins County Public Library. Southside Community Center celebrates the Juneteenth Street Festival this Saturday, the 21st. With this year's theme of family reunion, everyone is invited to participate in the oldest known celebration of the legal emancipation of enslaved black people in the United States, with an all-day street festival starting at 10. Southside Community Center is at 305 South Plain Street in Ithaca. The Cornell Lab of Ornithology's new Center for Birds and Biodiversity welcomes visitors to its open house this Saturday from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at 159 Sapsucker Woods Road. The event will include behind-the-scenes tours, bird walks in the more than 4 miles of trails winding through the lab's 10-acre Sapsucker Woods Sanctuary, door prizes, bird call contests, bird feeding workshops, book signings, and face painting. The Student Reuse Project's 2003 Name Your Own Price yard sale continues June 21st and 22nd from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Collected items left behind by students include clothing, appliances, and housewares. The sale is located at 410 Old Teganic Boulevard, just off Route 89 on Inlet Island, across the street from Castaway's Bar. Proceeds will benefit Ithaca Community Radio. Mark Rust, a multi-talented family and children's performer from Woodstock, New York, will give a concert for the entire family at Montgomery Park in Dryden on Wednesday at 7 p.m. This show is the first in a series of concerts to be held this summer at Montgomery Park as part of the Music in the Park concert series, sponsored by the Town of Dryden Recreation Department. All shows are free and open to the public, and will be entertaining and educational for all ages. For more information, contact the Town of Dryden Recreation Department at 844-3303. Ithaca activist Paul Glover will lead a discussion on community-based economics at a regional Green Party meeting on Saturday, June 28th, in Freeville near Ithaca. The public is invited to join Greens from throughout Western New York at Earthwalk Farm for a day of discussion and debate on a wide range of green issues. A series of panel discussions and workshops will discuss electoral and non-electoral issues, including how to run successful Green Party campaigns, get local resolutions adopted, set up permaculture systems, and organize green media outlets. Suzanne and Lynn McManus, who are hosting the gathering at their organic farm, will be leading a workshop on living off the grid and giving a tour of their partially constructed straw bale house. A $5 contribution is requested to cover costs. For more information, call Victoria Jordan at 539-6986. This week's show is produced by Jesse Lind, Jeff Kirby, Laura Ratzloff, and Laura Heddy. Special thanks to Kenny Ritter. Our theme music is an instrumental version of Circus by Crow Greenspun. During the show, we played music from the Horseflies. For online information about the music we've played and contact info for calendar events we've announced, go to our webpage at ithacaradio.org/radiohour. I'm your host, John Illingworth. Thanks for listening, and tune in next week.
The Ithaca Radio Hour is a project of Ithaca Community Radio and is produced at Rep Studio. For more information about ICR, visit our website at ithacaradio.org. You're listening to WEOS 89.7 Geneva, broadcast in Ithaca by ICR on 88.1, or WHRW 90.5 Binghamton.